This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
It's DCR.
The Yankees are the prohibitive favorites to win the American League.
Our goal is to win a world championship. That's what we feel like we're capable of.
I think there's always pressure. How much managing is Aaron Boone really doing? So if you're going to say there's pressure on him, then there's pressure on Brian Cashman.
I think there is pressure on Brian Cashman.
We've had championship caliber teams, including last year. We were championship caliber, and if we performed obviously better, we could have been representing our league in the World Series.
The expectation is this team is going to go to the World Series.
Thanks. Is DCR on 98.7 ESPN.
Everybody. All right, welcome in. 7 o'clock hour. DCR with you, 98.7 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. A lot of baseball talk. Yankees start things out today. Start of baseball is April the 1st, and Tim Kirkjian is going to join us to help break things down with the New York Yankees. RJ, is he there? We have Tim with us? All right, terrific. Let's bring him in. Tim, we appreciate a couple of minutes here on 98.7 ESPN. I'm sure we'll talk to you a bunch during the season. It's a nice way to start things out. Welcome aboard. And let's start out with the Yankees and obviously the rotation. There's a lot of question marks surrounding it. Do you feel heading into the season, and we know that things can certainly change, but heading into the year, do you have faith that the Yankees have enough starting pitching right now?
Well, that's the real big question, but I kind of like the way they've gone about this. Instead of maybe giving Trevor Bauer $40 million a year when they just gave Gerrit Cole something like that, they're going to take some chances here, and it's risky. However, their bullpen is still really good. Their lineup is tremendous. They're going to the playoffs. They're the best team in the East for me as it is, and if Kluber and Taillon and Severino comes back and some other guys work out, they have a chance to be, you know, the best team certainly in the American League this year if everything goes right. Now, everything could go wrong and they could have major starting pitching issues, but in a year where there weren't a whole lot of options for starting pitching, I think they took an interesting route, and we'll see how much Kluber's got left. We'll see if Taillon's got something big left. It's an interesting dynamic, but I kind of like where they are.
So, Tim, in your opinion, who's in that same conversation with the Yankees as far as could be, you know, the best team in the American League?
Well, the White Sox are really good, and they're dramatically better with some of the things they did in the offseason. Twins have been awfully good for a couple years. The A's have taken a step backwards, so I'm not sure they're in there. The Blue Jays are demonstrably better than they were 6 months ago, and they made the playoffs last year. And, of course, the Rays are never to be trifled with. The Rays went to the World Series almost, you know, went to six games of the World Series last year. So all those teams are in the conversation, which makes for a very healthy American League that many teams are in it. But I just think the upside with the Yankees, when everything is right for them, and that's what that starting pitching is all about, they have a chance to still be the best team in the American League because when they're healthy, they can just bludgeon you. And just getting DJ LeMahieu back is the absolute key for the Yankees in the offseason. I remember when he was sick and he showed up, you know, COVID and everything showed up, and Aaron Boone looked at me and said, "The machine is in the house." And it was such a comforting thing to know LeMahieu is with us again. He's healthy again, and now he's going to be with them for a long time.
Tim, you talked about if everything was right for the Yankees. As a Yankees fan, one of the guys that wasn't right last year was Gary Sanchez. And you know, it feels like the Yankees are at a pivot point with him. What are people in and around baseball saying about Gary Sanchez and their expectations for him this year?
Well, he needs a huge comeback year, but the people in baseball still look at that power potential, and it's just impossible to discard that. I mean, I heard things about, oh, they're going to release him, they're going to DFA him, they're going to trade him, and I understood all of that, but you can't do that until you give him one more shot here. I know he's had a couple shots, but that power is enormous. That guy is a really good hitter when he's right. He just wasn't even close to being right last year. And, of course, his defense is going to have to improve significantly. And he's not going to catch Gerrit Cole if that's not the right thing to do on that day. So those are the things you have to deal with Gary Sanchez. But I think he's worth sticking around for one more year and seeing if he says, all right, I got to do way better than that.
Tim Kirkchin with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Tim, I know that Rick asked you about the American League as a whole and who's there with the Yankees, but how about this division? Because it's been the Rays and the Yankees for a number of years now after Boston kind of has tailed off. But is it Tampa or is it Toronto as that second team right now?
Well, I'm still going to keep it as Tampa because I've made this mistake so many times, fellas, where they lose somebody and you say, all right, they're not coming back from this. And then they make the playoffs again. But they lost a lot. Blake Snell, Charlie Morton, those are huge losses from a rotation. And I'm not sure there's enough there. And I really like what the Blue Jays have done. And I think psychologically they've entered at least a territory near the Yankees by getting George Springer. It takes sometimes a big contract and a big-time player, especially with an October resume like his, to show everyone, look, we're serious now about winning. But they also upgraded in the starting rotation. They added a closer that they had to have. And to add to that young core that they already have, I mean, I really like where the Blue Jays are, but I'm not quite ready to say, oh, yeah, they're better than the Rays because, again, I've made that mistake before.
See, this is the problem with having someone as good as Tim on. Now, he just said two different things that have me. I want to ask three different questions at the same time.
Ask a multi-layered question.
No, because they're all separate questions. I'll ask him the most important question as, you know, as Mets fans, Dave and I are Mets fans, and how this makes sense for Major League Baseball. Tim, how are we in a spot now where we still, I mean, I guess we've kind of decided, but it seems like it would benefit both sides that the universal DH and no expanded postseason, is there still a chance that both of those things happen?
I think it's unlikely, but yes, I still think there's a chance. Even though it was rejected, it's still a negotiating situation. And don't forget, you know, we agreed to expanded playoffs last year, like an hour before Max Scherzer threw the first pitch of the season. So this is a fluid situation. We made things up on the fly last year, and we'll do it again this year, I'm sure, because of the COVID situation, which requires extraordinary circumstances, and that's where we are now. So I don't think it's out of the question, but both sides have to recognize that these two are not bargaining chips, even though that's how they're being viewed. If we're going to get through this 2021 season, we're going to have to see the best way to play in 2021 and forget about what are we going to do when the CBA expires on December 1st. What bargaining chips are we going to have at our disposal? So to me, the logical thing is just to put the universal DH in and keep the pitchers healthy and allow Juan Soto, for instance, to have a day off in the outfield and still get four at-bats. That's the right thing to do for now, given the COVID situation.
So, Tim, you know I do the show with two Mets fans. A lot of Mets fans called into our show. They were disappointed that, you know, they missed out on George Springer. They missed out on Trevor Bauer. What do you make of the Mets offseason so far? And do you think they have any moves in them left before the start of the regular season?
I think they'll do something else, but I think they're done with the big moves because the big players are essentially gone. And yes, I thought they would get Springer or Bauer, and they didn't. And that's for a Mets fan, I guess that's slightly disappointing. But they also got one of the five best players in the game, Francisco Lindor. You guys know him. He's great. He's a switch hitter who can hit leadoff or hit third. He's one of the premier defensive shortstops in the game. He will solidify the infield. He's a born leader. He's got remarkable energy that he brings every day. He's got a smile that's going to light up Citi Field. He won't be enough for them to, you know, pass the Nationals and the Braves and everyone else in that ridiculously strong division. But the catcher, you know, McCann makes them better. They've added some pitching help. So I think the Mets are a legitimate contender for a playoff spot with what they've done. Is it everything they wanted to do? No. But they had a good offseason. I don't think there's any way around that.
All right, Tim. Great stuff from you. We'll certainly talk to you as the season gets closer. Enjoy this frigid weather, and we'll talk to you real soon. Thanks so much.
Okay, guys. See you.
All right. Good stuff. I love the goodbye from Tim Kirkchin. See you.
Listen to what he just said, though. I mean, the Mets did. They had a good offseason. They had a good offseason.
They did have a good offseason.
Okay, they're not done, so they may add, I mean, if it's bullpen, they definitely need bullpen. We still think rotation. But, I mean,
he's. Now, Odorizzi still out there, isn't he?
Yeah, and so is Walker. But, I mean, but he also said, does that get you up? Like, bringing Lindor is great, but in his opinion, it doesn't get you past the Nationals.
The Nationals, yeah.
I just don't understand why there were a handful of guys that would clearly help the team, and we didn't make that take that necessary step.
The Springer move is the confounding one to me.
I just don't like it. If your concern was, I don't want to be that guy. Like, all the conversations surrounding me buying the team was, you know, we'll approve you, just don't make us look stupid by spending, you know, a ridiculous amount of money and embarrassing everybody. Which is exactly what the Dodgers just did. The Dodgers are spending almost $260 million this year, Dave.
Yeah, coming off a World Series championship.
So, I mean, if there was going to be a time to do it, especially when you start talking about, I expect to win a championship in 3 to 5 years.
Because it's not like he wasn't in. It's not like he said, you know what, I'm not going to go after Springer. I'm not going to go after Bauer. They went in, and they went up to certain levels, but they didn't you make these monstrosity offers.
I think they got played by Trevor Bauer. I think the reason why they don't extend to get Real Muto or Springer is
because
they
Bauer was the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Well, you saw the offer that they made.
Yeah, they made a huge offer,
and he dragged this thing along to the point where all of a sudden they had lost out on Springer, and now he was going to be their guy. If they sign Bauer, all of a sudden it goes from a really good offseason to an unbelievable offseason, and the whole time Bauer was hoping that the Dodgers would come to the table.
Yeah, I don't know that he ever intended to sign with the Mets. I don't. I think I agree with you.
David, his press conference, he said, me going to the Dodgers was a long time coming.
Well, he's from there. They're a great team. There's less pressure there. From his standpoint, what's not to like about the Dodgers?
I wonder if you got them. I wonder if you got Sandy to admit it. Like, if you gave him truth serum, if he would say that they would have signed, if they knew they were out on Bauer.
If you could walk it back, you'd go get Springer if you knew you could get Bauer. Springer. Yeah, so maybe the way it played out, the order it played out really affected the Mets negatively then.
Well, it would make sense, though, right? I mean, the reason why, because we thought the whole time the reason why they signed McCann is because Real Muto was going to cost too much money, so now they'd have the flexibility to get, you know, a Springer or a Bauer. And you didn't get either of those.
No.
You didn't get Hand. You didn't get Wilson. You didn't get Paxton.
No. Well, we'll see. I still stand by it, and it sounds like Tim agrees. I still don't think things are done.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's hear the audio. Stump Rothenberg, I thought that Rick said current Yankee. He claims he did not. Can we go to the audio from moments ago?
Which Yankee currently holds the highest career batting average as a Yankee?
See, I feel like you're pretty much off the hook here, but I don't know why you had to say currently.
Because that was how I decided to word the question.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Yeah, it's kind of sent us down the wrong path,
but
right?
Here's what I don't understand. Even the phraseology of the question, if it's not as upsetting, you heard me going through the list of guys I was going to answer, and I think I made mention, oh, current. I have to go current. I need to go current. You could have said, no, Dave, I said currently who holds the record. You could have adjusted me.
In all honesty, I mean, if we're being completely transparent, yeah, you actually screwed me up when you said DJ LeMahieu.
Because I was like,
well, because I was like, because I'm reading the question, because I was like, where I was getting the question from had, you know, Babe Ruth 349 as the answer.
Right.
And I figured when I asked you the question, because you're a savant, what could maybe trip you up with you getting it wrong is maybe you thought it was going to be Gehrig instead of Babe Ruth.
That would have been my other thought, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but as soon as you said LeMahieu, and I'm looking at 349, and LeMahieu just came off a 364 season and won the batting title, I'm like, oh, no.
maybe the question might not have been.
I had insight you didn't have.
Yeah, so as you're trying to answer the question, I'm like trying to add up what DJ LeMahieu's average as a Yankee has been.
But you didn't need to use currently to ask the question, though.
Because where I was reading the question from, that's how they had it worded.
Gotcha.
So you stole the question from somewhere, literally word for word.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the question. I was like, oh, this is a good question. Because maybe, I mean, no, I don't know how many people associate Babe Ruth with being that good of a, as far as average was concerned. It's always, you know, Babe Ruth with the home runs. Did they realize how good, you know, his average was? So I was like, oh, this is a good question. So rather than word it myself, I just read the question.
Right. It was a good question. I just wish that you had as I was going through like current.
I'll take the blame. Listen, I'm fine. I'll take the blame.
No. I think we can all take the blame here. And we learn from our mistakes and we move forward. 800-919-3776, DCR 98.7 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Dan Graziano in 10 minutes, and then we'll finish off the show with some NFL conversation. But last night, guys, and we'll go back to it, the Nets, they are offensively sensational. No Kevin Durant, no Kyrie Irving, trailed by 20-plus, back-to-back nights, on the road, still really outscoring Phoenix down the stretch. A remarkable job from this team.
You know what's impressive, Dave? The fact that James Harden is able to wear the different hats that he has to with his team. Like with Kyrie and KD out there, he clearly has to accept a different role, and he's more of a facilitator than anything else. But with both of those guys being out of the lineup, and I got to think that the Kyrie thing was last minute with the tight back. I mean, the fact that he can just go out there and drop 38 points and score or assist on 18 of the last 20 points that the Nets had to end that game. Like, that's unbelievable, man. James Harden just, I mean, he's different, man. I mean, he's a top seven player in the NBA, and when the Nets added him to this roster, they absolutely became the favorites to go to the East, to go to the NBA Finals, and I don't see anybody in the East that's going to be able to stop him right now.
All right, so let's revisit this quickly. We threw it out there in the 5 o'clock hour. Let's get back here now. I pose the question to the guys. I'll pose it to you. 800-919-3776. The Nets or the field, as we sit here on February 17th, to go to the NBA Finals. And according to you guys, there's only really one other team you can realistically see in the NBA Finals. So I might be just asking you, Rick, do you go Nets or do you go Sixers to the NBA Finals?
Yeah, first things first, though. Could you imagine how tight Kyrie's back would be if he didn't travel with a walking stick?
Thank God for that.
Did you see him? Dude, I'm telling you right now, Steve Nash, what he's putting up with. Did you see him walk into the arena with the giant walking stick?
Yes.
This guy is different level, man. I've had some teammates that do weird things, but between him saging the court and
how about that? He's walking up and down the, and wasn't it? It wasn't just the court. It was the Boston Garden, right? Like the most famous of all the shrines to the NBA.
And then he comes strolling in with the giant walking stick. This dude is unbelievable. It's the Sixers and the Nets. I mean, if both teams fully healthy, I would imagine that the Nets probably make another move to kind of solidify the interior of their defense. I would have a hard time betting against the Nets. Just because offensively, who do you shut down? I mean, it's pick your poison. It really is. And by the way, I mean, James Harden being traded here, I know he's trying to win a championship, but as far as the narrative surrounding James Harden, I mean, how good has this move been for James Harden right now with what he's been able to do?
It's great. He looks unbelievable. And he's kind of transformed his game a little bit, too. Because when the other two guys are playing, which is not often with James Harden, he's kind of taken that secondary role as far as I got to score 35 points a game.
Yeah, but again, last night you see, I mean, when he needs to be the kind of scorer he was in Houston, he's more than capable of doing it. And he got everyone involved. I mean, Joe Harris had a big game. Tyler Johnson had a big game. Jeff Green's been great for them, period. Landry Shamet had a big game. So maybe it sucks not having those two guys in the lineup because you'd like the, you know, the continuity of having them play together, but at least it gives the opportunity now for, you know, Steve Nash to get a look at some of these other guys that he feels like can, you know, depth-wise, help them moving forward.
I just don't know how you stop them. And all guests on DCR appear via the Goodyear hotline. I just, you know, if you slow down, and I don't think you stop Joel Embiid, but if you slow him down, you have a good chance of beating the 76ers. If you slow down Giannis, you have a good chance of beating the Milwaukee Bucks. Who's the guy you even want to slow down? You slow down Durant, you have two guys that are easily capable of going for 35 any night. If you slow down Kyrie, you have two guys that can easily go for 70 points combined. Like, I don't even know what you do. What's the appropriate way to try to slow them down?
How do you slow them down?
I don't think you can. I don't think you can slow them down. I think the only way that you can beat this Brooklyn Nets team is if you slow the pace of the game down in its entirety, because you're not stopping all three of them. It's just not going to happen. I mean, all of them are great with the ball in their hands. They can all create. They can all set other guys up. They can all get their shots at will in one-on-one coverage. So, yeah, there is no shutting down this offense. The best thing that an opposing team can do is put pressure on the Nets defensively and then try to slow down the pace of the game. Otherwise, I don't know how you do it.
Speaking of pace, did you see that last night? When they were talking about, you know, Steve Nash, that was his return to Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, when Steve Nash, D'Antoni, and, you know, Mari Stoudemire, like the pace they actually had the, I mean, their pace was like, oh, we haven't seen this in the NBA before. It's, you know, 7 seconds or less. That now, you know, fast forward to today, the pace that Phoenix plays at now is actually a faster pace than the Suns, and it ranks 29th in the NBA.
Wait, the current Suns are faster than those Suns, and that's 29th in the NBA? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, those Suns had the fastest. They pace-wise, they were number one in the NBA.
Right.
This Suns team is actually, you know, pace-wise faster, but
and
they rank
29th.
29th in the NBA.
Well, think about it. The Knicks lead the NBA in scoring defense, right? And I think allow 102 points a game. That's the best in the NBA, is allowing 102 points a game. So the game is, it's tremendously offensive-oriented, which goes back to looking at Brooklyn and saying, if it's offensive-oriented, there's no team built better to, you know, to score points than Brooklyn.
In the East, no. I just don't know how you, like, I don't know how you stop it. I mean, even with, I mean, so who are you going to double team? Are you going to try to trap James Harden? And then what? And then he dishes, I mean, we've already seen that he can, I mean, the way he passes, now all of a sudden he swings the ball to Kyrie. How are you stopping Kyrie? And he swings the ball to Kevin Durant.
There are no good answers. There are no good answers.
I don't think you can. The only question, and I'm not ready to say this yet, certainly, is are they better than the Lakers? That to me is the remaining question. I think clearly they're the best team in the Eastern Conference.
That Anthony Davis situation is a sketchy situation, though.
Yes, it is.
Coming off of what? I mean, go back to what Rich Paul said about, remember when that whole KD thing happened? It was a calf strain, and they let him play, and he blows his Achilles out. Remember they actually asked Rich Paul, like, what if that was LeBron with that same injury, what would you have told him? He said, I wouldn't have let him play it. I would have told him to shut it down. So, I mean, Anthony Davis is a clutch client, and it sounds a lot like what Kevin Durant had before his Achilles popped. Like lower calf strain into his Achilles. I mean, that's, you got to be careful with those things. Like Bart says, it's the Kardashians, it's weed and the Achilles. Major downfalls.
I will tell you this. If Anthony Davis is hampered, it changes the entire dynamic of the NBA landscape.
Changes everything for the Lakers.
Everything changes.
Well, if Anthony Davis is hurt, then I don't know that the Lakers are going to be coming out of the Western Conference.
They're not.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just think whoever comes out of the West, that's probably going to present the biggest challenge for the Brooklyn Nets in terms of trying to win a championship.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
The immensely talented Dan Graziano joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Before we even go around the NFL, I think the question everyone wants to know is, have you gotten on the Peloton yet today, Dan?
No. My wife's on there now, but no, usually when I got the morning shift, I really can't get on there till the afternoon. We got a 6 o'clock meeting for get up, and I can't get up at like 4:30, 5 o'clock to do it. So,
oh yeah, it can be difficult to wake up at that hour in the morning. Yeah, very difficult to get up.
I don't know how people do it. It makes no sense at all. Like, how can you get good work done at an hour like that?
Very well played, Dan. Very well played. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's go here. I'm reading yesterday. Reports about how the Panthers are going to be huge players for Deshaun Watson, even as much as throwing Christian McCaffrey along with multiple first-round picks. Do you think that that's viable? Do you think that the Panthers will be huge players and McCaffrey potentially will be involved in a trade for Watson if that comes to pass?
Yeah, I expect Carolina to be, if and when Houston decides to take people's calls, I would expect Carolina to be among the most aggressive teams in pursuing Watson. That's what we've been told since the start of this process, that you know, they're desperate to upgrade at quarterback, and obviously this is the biggest upgrade out there, assuming he's out there. In terms of the specifics on McCaffrey, I know that our Panthers reporter, our NFL Nation Panthers reporter, David Newton, mentioned that yesterday, and I think it was part of a bold predictions segment, like a bold prediction for the offseason. The Panthers will do everything they can to get Deshaun Watson, even throwing in 3 first-round picks and Christian McCaffrey. I would think if the Texans get to a point where they're going to start doing a deal, that's the kind of package that would get their attention for sure. McCaffrey obviously is signed at a high number for a running back, but is a special player, and obviously the 3 first-round picks give Houston something that they don't have to try and rebuild in a post-Watson world if that's where they are.
Dan, in your opinion, what is exactly Houston's strategy at the moment with Deshaun Watson?
Houston believes that they can get it fixed, that they can, you know, sort of talk him down from where he is and get to a point where he's happy to come back. Or that they can at least push it to a point where he has to make a decision on whether he wants to sit out games, right? I mean, their position is he's under contract. They believe he's going to be on the team. They're not considering trading him right now. So it's a question of to Deshaun Watson. It always reminds me of Sean Connery in The Untouchables. What are you prepared to do? Like, are you willing to sit out training camp and incur the fines? Are you willing to sit out real regular season games? To pull a Carson Palmer, you know, once upon a time, who told the Bengals he would retire rather than play for them again, and he did it. And then eventually, several months later, they did trade him to the Raiders. So if that's a path he wants to go down, then that would force Houston's hand, but they don't feel right now that their hand has been forced.
Dan, I want to ask you about Russell Wilson and what's going on with him and the Seahawks. How does Seattle put a Band-Aid on this situation? Is it involving Russ in personnel decisions? Is it potentially moving on from Pete Carroll? Is it trading him? How do they fix the relationship between Russ and the organization? Or can it be fixed?
I mean, again, you know, I think it can. I mean, look, again, this is a guy that ends every single press conference and interview with "Go Hawks," right? I mean, like, he's a team guy. He likes it there. He just wants to be able to win there. So I think, you know, an off season that sends the message that, hey, we heard your concerns and we're paying attention. Like, if they do invest in the offensive line at a higher level than they have in the past, or, you know, if they, I mean, the new offensive coordinator could be someone that energizes Russell Wilson and the offense in a different kind of way. So, yeah, I don't think it's at a breaking point there. I think it's sort of what we heard last week. It sounds seismic because it's Russell Wilson, and we never hear anything but positive stuff from him. So even the slightest hint of negativity makes you feel like, oh, it must be a disaster. But I don't think it's a disaster. And I think, you know, if they have the kind of offseason and the kind of season that he hopes they have, then it's certainly fixable. If they don't, you know, if they have a disappointing year, and he feels like the problems are same old, then this time next year, the contract is obviously more tradable at that point, and you could be talking about Seattle moving on. But that's not Seattle's mindset right now. And I mean, I don't think it's Russell Wilson's. I just think he wants to be heard and wants the team to acknowledge sort of what his priorities are as well.
Dan Graziano joining us here on a Wednesday morning, 98.7 ESPN DCR with you. Let's get to the Jets. We've heard rumor mill about Deshaun Watson. We've heard the potential of keeping Sam Darnold. We've heard about drafting a Zach Wilson or a Justin Fields. Give me in your mind, Dan, as we sit here, and still a couple of months away from the draft, the pecking order of what you think the Jets would do. What kind of 1, 2, and 3? Darnold, the new young quarterback, or the veteran like a Deshaun Watson?
I think the most likely scenario right now is that they would trade Darnold and draft a quarterback at number 2. You know, if Deshaun Watson were to become available, they would have to get involved in that. They would be silly not to. But realistically, are they prepared to offer the same kind of package that someone else might be? It's hard. I mean, they could get him. Like, they have 2 first-round picks, including the 2nd overall. I mean, start there, and they're certainly putting together something interesting. But they might not know before free agency and the draft what Houston's going to do. If Houston's still taking the position into the summer that we're not going to move Watson, then you got to make other plans. My understanding is the Jets are looking at the draft quarterbacks right now, evaluating, trying to make a decision. You know, do we want to go with one of these guys, one of these non-Trevor Lawrence quarterbacks in the draft, and move Sam Darnold, or are we better off keeping Darnold, building around him, using those 2 first-round picks to build around him, or trading the number 2 pick to get even more picks to a team that does want to come up and get a quarterback. So that's where they are right now. If I were a betting man, which I am not, I want that made clear, I would definitely at this point think that they're leaning toward drafting one and moving Darnold, but I don't think that's set in stone yet.
Gambling degenerate Dan Graziano joins us here in the show. Dan, so if that was the case, and, you know, they do decide to move on from Sam and trade him, I mean, what are the teams that you look at right now that would be, you know, willing to trade for Sam Darnold?
I think he's an interesting prospect for a lot of teams. He's 6 months younger than Joe Burrow, so it's not as if this is some sort of lost cause, right? Like, he's shown enough in terms of arm talent, and it doesn't seem like there's any kind of, you know, character concern, any kind of concern about, I mean, there's nothing other than he hasn't been healthy and there hasn't been stability around him. I just don't think there's any reason teams are necessarily turned off by Sam Darnold any more than they might have been when he was coming out of college. So if he's a player you liked 3 years ago, he's probably still a player you like to some extent. which team of Indy or Chicago doesn't get Carson Wentz? That's a team that could be interested in Sam Darnold. A Washington football team is looking for a quarterback. That's a team that could be interested in Sam Darnold. Just look around the league at teams. I mean, I would say New England, but I don't think the Jets want to do an in-division trade. Anybody who's looking for quarterback at this point could certainly be in the market for a young, talented guy to add to their mix. If Ben Roethlisberger retires from the Steelers, he's interesting there. If the Saints don't bring back Jameis Winston, he's interesting there. So I think he's just sort of an intriguing option for teams as they move down the ladder of available guys, which if you figure Deshaun Watson's at the top, and if you still think Carson Wentz belongs in that second spot, as you move down and you don't get those guys, then he's a guy you end up looking at.
Dan, over the last couple of days, a report surfaced that the market for Carson Wentz wasn't as robust as the Eagles initially thought it would be in terms of trade compensation going back to him. It seems like it's an inevitability that Wentz is going to be traded, but I wanted to ask you, based on your read on the situation, is there a world where Carson Wentz is back in Philadelphia playing quarterback in 2021?
I don't think so. I think he'll be traded. I don't know the team. I think it's Chicago or Indianapolis, but I do believe it'll be done in advance, if not well in advance, of that March 20th date when the Eagles would have to pay him a $10 million roster bonus. They don't want to do that if they're not going to have him. So I think they'll get a deal done. I'd be really surprised if everything you said is accurate. The market for him was not what they hoped it would be. I don't think they're going to get the return they initially hoped they would get. But I do think that there has been enough interest and there's enough motivation from Philly's end to move him that it will get done.
All right, Dan, great stuff as always. Good luck with the Peloton streak later today, and we will talk to you next week.
Yeah, after I get back from the OTB, I'll get right on it.
Bet on the four horse. There you have it. Good stuff, Dan. Thanks, bud. So you upset him. You took shots at him being a degenerate gambler. Maybe he is. Maybe you conjured up old awful feelings.
No, I know he's not. I mean, he told us he's not. I mean, he took shots at us to start the interview. I don't know how you do good work that early in the morning. I mean, that's a direct shot.
It is. That's true. You know what? I forgot about that. Short-term memory. You're right. You should have gone after him harder with his gambling issues.
I love Dan.
Well,
he stopped too with the Peloton. He doesn't have to be on the Peloton to keep the streak alive.
What do you mean he doesn't have to be on it?
You don't have to ride the bike to do it. Part of the streak is Peloton also has like all sorts of different, like you can do strength workouts, you can do like all the different things. Like as long as he has to do something. Yeah, but you're not on the bike to do all of it. It's not always riding the bike every single day.
I think the in-depth article I read about him said that he was on the Peloton every day.
False.
No?
No, he asked him that last time. It's doing a workout related to the Peloton every single day.
Still pretty impressive for over a year straight, not missing a day.
He looks great.
Terrific.
He's a big TV star now.
Have you ever seen this? He almost looks too skinny. Where you're like, you know what? He could afford to put on 5 to 10 pounds.
Yeah, my TV's tough though. I just get his neck. I mean, it's just, I think he looks good. Suit fits him nice. Come on. Looks great.
He looks good. I'm just saying. If you've lost so much weight that you could afford to put on a couple pounds, you've done a hell of a job. Beautiful job.
You saw me when I was 185. I was gross.
Yeah, well, that's you. For all the ones who get it done, Grainger is always there to help. Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, 24/7 support, free access to product specialists, and experienced staff at over 250 local branches. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Here's what you do. You call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop on by. Now, you mentioned something yesterday. It was wonderful timing-wise. You did it at like 7:29:50 when we go to break at 7:30. But I thought that the idea was honestly very, very good. Revisit that, and let's get into it a little bit now with the local quarterbacks and where they would be taken in this year's draft.
Oh, so Mel Kiper was asked, you know, once you get past Trevor Lawrence, how would you grade, you know, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Trey Lance? And the name Daniel Jones is brought up. And he said, this is Mel Kiper, as far as he's concerned, once you get past Trevor Lawrence, Daniel Jones would have been the second highest graded quarterback in this year's draft coming out of Duke. Which I thought was interesting. I mean, we've seen Daniel Jones for 2 years. I mean, what do you think Daniel Jones' ceiling is as a starting quarterback? In all honesty.
as far as just like numbers of where he could be. I'd say his ceiling is
top half of the league.
Yeah, I would agree. I think ceiling 10.
Okay, so you wouldn't say that at some point Daniel Jones could be at the level of Deshaun Watson?
No.
No, right?
No.
So, I mean, instantly I go to, you know, what should the Jets do at 2? And if you're telling me right now that Zach Wilson is not as talented as Daniel Jones, then the first thing that came to my mind is, then all of a sudden now I have to do whatever it takes to get Deshaun Watson. I have to. Like, why am I using the second overall pick with someone that's not going to have nearly the ceiling as Deshaun Watson has?
You're right. If Joe Douglas and the Jets scouting staff see it the same way, right, if they look at things, Chris, and they say, you know, the best he's going to be is Daniel Jones-esque or have that ceiling or can be a top 10 quarterback in that range, you wouldn't take him second overall. But I think this is kind of what makes a horse race. Everyone has different opinions on these quarterbacks.
Well, yeah, but I think we all said from the outset, once Deshaun Watson said that he wanted out of Houston, like, if you're the Jets, you have to try to make this happen. I mean, Deshaun Watson is 25 years old. You're going to get a decade's worth of top-end quarterback production. Like, you have to do that, and you have the draft capital that's in place. You got the second overall pick, you got 4 first-round picks over the next 2 years, and you got the second most cap space of any team. Like, you could instantly transform your franchise if you're able to pry Deshaun Watson out of Houston and then go into free agency knowing that that's your quarterback. Like, you could change everything. I mean, it's not far-fetched to think that the Jets could potentially flirt with the playoffs if Deshaun Watson is your guy going into 2021. But I think that it's important that Joe Douglas explore that possibility and, you know, try to see if he can get that done before the draft. But if you get to the point where you're at the draft and you got to make a decision and you don't have Deshaun Watson as an option, I can't see how you justify running it back with Sam Darnold.
You know what, Dave, for me, the beauty of having someone like Deshaun Watson is that as an organization, as a coaching staff, you don't get to a point where you feel like you're ever going to be limited. Like, I mean, there are plenty of teams. Like, I think San Francisco is a perfect example of this. Even the Rams, too, is Jared Goff's the first overall pick. They get to a Super Bowl, but then Sean McVay realizes, like, in order to actually win that Super Bowl, like, I need someone that can get us to that level. Like, Jimmy G is good, but if I could upgrade to a Deshaun Watson, then now all of a sudden, sky's the limit. Like,
Rico, when you have a quarterback like that, you have more margin for error. Players, his teammates, the coaching staff, you have more margin for error. Like, you don't have to be perfect. Everything doesn't have to be perfect because this one player is so good that they're able to overcome any deficiencies that you might have from a talent standpoint or anything that might come up where you're getting out-coached, out-skiing with the X's and O's. Like, Deshaun Watson can elevate your team over all of those different things. And so that's why there's so much value in being able to bring over that type of player. That's why there's such a premium on quarterbacks, just because by nature of the position, the impact that they can have on winning. But if you have an elite-level guy, I mean, it changes everything in terms of your ability to be competitive week in and week out, but also season in, season out. And I think that's the part, that's the appeal when it comes to getting Deshaun Watson, especially at 25 years old.
In all honesty, Dave, I mean, probably on one hand, you tell me how many teams aren't left wanting more from their quarterback.
Kansas City. I mean, not wanting more. I mean, I think realistically, I think the Chargers are probably that kind of a team right now.
At the moment.
Green Bay. Not a lot.
There's usually about six to eight teams that are set at quarterback.
The Packers.
Yeah.
The Seahawks. I think the Cowboys. The Bucks.
Well, yeah. You say the Cowboys, but for some reason, I don't know, it doesn't like...
Well, but just because they don't see it doesn't... I mean, come on. What more could they possibly want from Dak Prescott?
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying, I mean, their actions would say otherwise, currently.
Yeah, and I think they've screwed this thing up from the beginning. But you're right. I understand your point, and Chris is also... I think between 6 and 8, maybe up to 10, that just has to say, we're locked in, no worries, we move forward with that guy.
Yeah, I just don't understand, though, like, the mindset of a Jets fan that thinks, well, if we give away all these first-round picks... then all this is going to be is, you know, the East Coast version of the Houston Texans. Like, if you believe that Joe Douglas is a good GM, like, he can, I mean, between salary cap space and, you know, second, third, I mean, that's, you don't think that you can have a team good enough to compete?
Absolutely.
It's not next year, but the guy's only 25 years old.
But you're going to be better. If you add Deshaun Watson and add a receiver in free agency and C.J. Mosley comes back, you're telling me the Jets can't be a 6-8 win team and then in 2 years be a team that realistically competes for a postseason spot?
I would have a hard time imagining that would not be the case.
I would think it would be. Let's go to Shooter, and that's not me with the nickname. That's the true name. Shooter in Stanford. Shooter, you're next up on 98.7.
How are you guys? By the way, 25th anniversary of Happy Gilmore yesterday.
Saw that.
So Shooter's not your real name, then. This is in homage to the movie.
Yeah, I look like Shooter. That's why they call me Shooter McGavin. But I don't eat pizza, you know what, for breakfast. But here's my inside information, guys. I was a COVID long hauler, which means I got COVID back in March. And my endurance, my stamina, all this stuff was messed up probably for about a year. And I strongly believe that Cam Newton, who was amazing for the first three games, not amazing, but good, slowed down to the point where he's almost a step behind everyone on the field. And I believe he still can be great, and hopefully he goes to the right team and maybe not on the Patriots because I'm a Giants fan. But also, what about straight-up trade Matty Ice and get him off the team for Deshaun Watson? That could be a good switch. Both teams win. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, Atlanta wins. I don't know how Houston wins. I mean,
Atlanta would win in a big way, I think, with that trade.
Yeah.
You get a young quarterback for a quarterback that they're on the verge of cutting ties with anyhow.
As far as the Cam Newton thing is concerned, I mean, to start the season, he looked really good, and then all of a sudden COVID and the COVID fog and everything else. He just didn't look like he could throw a football anymore.
No. He looked awful. Now, listen. Is there a chance that that's the case? I think so. There was an article about Jason Tatum yesterday. He said he can't run the court properly still after having COVID. But here's the thing. If I'm a GM in the NFL, even if that is the case, I can't rely on Cam Newton to be my quarterback of the future. Like, if he's into battle for a job, that's one thing. But I can't hand him the keys to the car. I just can't do it.
No, not after what you saw last season. I mean, maybe he ends up in Washington. Like, if Washington, I mean, maybe he ends up there just because of the relationship with Ron Rivera, but... Or maybe he goes back to the Patriots. That's really for me. I mean, what the Patriots do at the quarterback position is like one of the most interesting things, I think, this offseason. You got to imagine, he wants to start. I mean, Tom Brady just won the freaking Super Bowl in his first year with Tampa. I mean, you don't think there's some pressure on Bill? Or maybe he doesn't look at it that way.
Yeah, but he's trying to catch Don Shula down there in Miami. So, I mean, you got to think that he wants to be able to try to put together some winning seasons here over the course of the remaining years of his career. But he got to find a quarterback in order to do that. So I do think that's interesting. But they do have the 15th overall pick. So you got to think if there's a quarterback that's within striking distance, that Bill will make a move and go up and get him. But quarterbacks are at a premium, man. You're seeing all these NFL teams jockey for position, whether it's to trade for a quarterback that's on another team or to move up the draft board. Like, quarterback is at a premium. Quarterback play has never been more important based on today's NFL and how the game is played.
Quickly, Chris, and I want to get to the three stars, which I'm sure Rick wishes I forget, but I don't forget anymore. I don't know if you saw J.J. Watt. He had an Instagram post yesterday. He said, all gas, no brakes. I know that's an homage to the Jets head coach, but you can't envision J.J. Watt coming here to the Jets, can you?
No, I think J.J. Watt could probably try to be drumming up a market for him if the Jets get involved because they got a lot of cap space. Maybe that bumps up another team. But Mary-Kate Cabot from Cleveland, she said that she believes that J.J. Watt is interested in there and the feeling is mutual from the Browns. So we'll see.
Yeah, and they have the odds-on favorite to land one J.J. Watt. All right, let's go. Little three stars.
Today's three stars of DCR. Number three.
Guys, shout out to James Harden, who, again, RJ pointed out, he probably thought he was coming to Brooklyn to take it easy, but no Kyrie, no KD. Still gets it done. Great comeback win against the Suns.
Number two.
Shout out to Dan Graziano, because I'm going to defend Dan Graziano here. The only vice he has is not OTB, is not betting, it's just the Peloton. We appreciate his efforts and we appreciate him taking time, not going on KJZ, not going on Get Up, whatever it is, and chatting with us today.
Yeah, but he took shots at us.
That's fine.
With the early hour that we have to wake up to do the show.
I didn't take that as a shot, though.
What do you mean? It was a direct shot. It was like a sniper.
I take it as that better you guys handling it than me. I think you should take that as a compliment.
You think that Santiago was going to give you any benefit of the doubt after you spent the entire show, after he asked you politely off the air to do something, that you mocked him for the rest of the show?
I didn't mock. There was no mock.
You made up a nickname for every single person that you took on the phone.
I'm Nickname Guy. That's who I'm going to be. I love the nickname. I appreciate it.
And on that note,
number all right, Raimundo, continue along.
Number one star is just nicknames. I appreciate that what we've done here is we've established that at least you're aware of it now. And I appreciate you making sure everyone has a nickname and sort of going with it. And again, I give credit to the callers and the listeners for not being thrown off when you do it. So that's a number one star for not for Dave Rothenberg this time, but just nicknames in general.
So nicknames is the number one star of the day. Not me, not my man C, not Ricky Rose. It's not Delicious D. It's just nicknames.
I think you're kind of proving the point here.
I don't know what you're talking about. All right, we'll do this again tomorrow morning, bright and early. Dan Graziano at 5 o'clock. It's Rule 76.
No excuses. Playing a champion is DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg, and
hey, everybody
on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.